there, welcome to Let's Talk, your one-stop pod for all things pop culture. Following on from last week's episode about that small independent film franchise, Ringlord or whatever the hell it was, we thought we'd do this other, like, really small-scale, really niche TV show that you've probably never heard of called Strange Things. So Stranger Things, and it's the third season. We obviously love it. We've been talking about it incessantly for the last couple of years, for as long as it's been on. It's broken pretty much every Netflix record available, hasn't it? There's been 40-something million watches of it. 18 million people completed it within the first 3 or 4 days. So to say it's been mildly popular would be a bit of an understatement.
It's genius, actually, because the 4th of July thing is a very clever Netflix tool, because obviously it centres around the show being set in the summer. It also is a bank holiday in the States, or the equivalent of national holiday in the States. So I think a lot of people, other than, you know, the usual barbecues and fireworks and everything that goes on 4th of July, were watching, you know, most people watching Stranger Things. So obviously boomed quite quickly, and then everyone here in the same vein found a way to work from home, or found a way to watch it over the weekend,
or all of a sudden came down with diarrhea and had to spend all day in bed.
Things like that.
I'll bet you there was a mass of sick note calls on that Friday morning.
Yeah, I would say so. I think the thing with it is it's been a longer period in between the seasons.
Yeah, it's obviously been 2 years,
the second season. Yeah, so it's been, 20 months or whatever it is. Because it's normally October they release it. It's normally centred around Halloween, which kind of makes sense for Strange Things tone. But I thought the shift to being the summer just opened up so many more possibilities. And I think you could see that they've taken a lot of things on board from the second season, maybe things that worked, maybe things that didn't. Because I went back and did a full rewatch not long ago, probably a month ago, and I adore the first season. I think it's one of the finest, you know, individual seasons of TV ever made. And then the second season did feel, you know, I've watched it a few times now, probably 3 or 4, and that time it just didn't stick with me as much, you know. It's got a few flaws.
Very, very forgettable.
Yeah, exactly. And like, even thinking about it now, I can't really place. I know there's things to do with the pumpkins. I know, obviously, the Mind Flayer was part of it, and all the kind of stuff, and bringing Max in, those demodogs and stuff, which was quite cool.
But you remember bits, don't you? You don't remember the whole arc of the whole season.
That episode that I thought I liked at the time, which was when Eleven goes off to New York and meets, you know, other gang members.
I really, really didn't like that.
See, I when I first watched it, I went, yeah, that was quite cool, because I thought they were going to expand upon it, but obviously it was like episode 6 or something of 8, and it just didn't fit. And also, they've obviously realised that no one wants to see that, so they've moved on and forgotten about that entirely, which I think is the great thing to do. And actually, we'll go on to talk about it, but this season, they've really moved on from Eleven as a character, so it's kind of focusing on the others a lot more than expected, really.
Well, that's what I've said to a lot of people whenever anyone's asked me about it. The reason I like it so much is it seems so much more personal to everyone else, rather than just, we've got this superpowered kid, oh, and there's a few other people. If anything, she's almost more of a minor character, isn't she? It centres more around the normal kids and how they've got stuff to do. And I love that, because in the second season, they really did underplay a lot of the other cast. The only real thing to come out of season 2 that was of any note really was Max, wasn't it? Max and Billy. And you can sort of see that maybe season 2 had to happen to get us to 3. They had to throw in Billy as a bit of an arsehole. They had to throw in Max to, you know, mess around with the status quo of the group and to become the love interest for Lucas. And then that helps, because bearing in mind, we're watching these kids grow up on the show and in real life. So, you know, when they started, they were all like 11 years old, weren't they? Well, now they're all 15, 16. So on the show, we're seeing them change from being obsessed with Dungeons and Dragons to relationships and actually being more interested in slightly more adult things. So
yeah, you can tell they've got a lot more to play on, because they've gone, this is what 15 and 16 year olds did. They snuck into movies, they went to the mall, you know, all that kind of stuff that plays out so well in this season, and they had an interest in the same or the opposite sex, do you know what I mean? So it was quite clever.
And that was one of the things that was so interesting about Will, the way Will was kind of stuck in that Dungeons and Dragons
he's not had a childhood because he's been robbed from him for 2 years.
Well, exactly, because he was missing for so long, and then since he's come out, he's had a bit of a stunted development, hasn't he? And I like that it was, you know, that bit of conflict between Will and Mike of, he really was, neither one was really understanding the other. Why are you still obsessed with Dungeons and Dragons? Girls are yucky. Well, why are you still obsessed with girls? Dungeons and Dragons is what we've always done. And that really powerful scene where they were talking in the rain as Will was storming up, and you did sort of feel like neither one of them was right, but neither one of them was wrong either. They both made completely valid points, and they just, as a complete result of everything that's happened to Will, everyone's kind of been shifted a little bit, but him more than anyone else.
Yeah, and it is interesting because he doesn't really feel like there's a place there for him. You know, he's kind of, like you said, he feels like he's been a little bit betrayed, but he hasn't. It's just because his friends have developed different lives. Do you know what I mean? They've met other people, and for him, he's really not ever had that opportunity. And yeah, I mean,
and I don't know about you, but that I remember when that happened with me and my mates. You do get to that point, whether it's in, you know, you have one in primary school and then you have it in high school and college. You always have these points, don't you, where things just change.
I've definitely got mates that
your priorities change.
You know, I kind of grew up and they didn't a little bit, you know, or something along those lines. You know, it's tricky because your mates still want to be that. They want to take you, you know, this film's all, show's all about nostalgia and going back to what you did as a, you know, as a teenager or whatever. And it's not the 80s stuff that we'll talk about and is obviously such a fantastic part of the show. But it's more taking you back to your childhood in terms of your mindset, you know what I mean? In terms of what you did. So it's gone from, you know, from me playing video games, playing computer games, playing football, all that kind of stuff. So then your life changing, do you know what I mean? And your mates just aren't there every day, and you haven't got, you know, all that time after school because you start a job, or, you know, or you don't have the summers off anymore.
Yeah.
When the summers off were like the best thing in the world because you get 5 weeks just to mess around and, you know, go on an adventure or I don't know. And they're the movies I love so much in the 80s. Or 90s, just because
the coming of age things.
Yeah, the coming of age is really my, you know, if I'm being nostalgic, that's my go-to. So Stand By Me and The Goonies and all.
Yeah, I knew you'd say Stand By Me, but it's nice the way they didn't lean on so many of the tropes of, like, you know, let's keep talking about puberty and all those kinds of things. They showed the effects of people growing up, didn't they? You know,
it's more grown up. It, like we said, sometimes these shows spoon feed you a little bit too much. So if you see these bad films, usually films, sometimes TV shows that hit into the nostalgic stuff, and they just spoon feed people with it. Whereas I think this is a much better written show. Do you know what I mean? It's a much better established characters. And I think they let you think for yourself. So, you know, like you said, you don't need the whole explanation of what's going on in Will's head. You just understand it. Do you know what I mean?
Because we followed them for a few years, you do feel like
you've grown
know
up
them
with
a
them
bit.
A little bit as well. Yeah, you do feel like you've grown up with them because, you know, for young actors, they're all fantastic because it's not easy being a young actor, and a lot of them really struggle with it. And so they've done really well to cast them, but they've all grown as characters and actors. I mean, they're all ridiculously charismatic, and, you know, they've all generally gone off to do other things.
Dustin, Gatton Matarazzo, he's just...
He is
a scene stealer, and I thought Millie Bobby Brown was very good in this, more because she's actually got dialogue now rather than just, you know, the odd word like ego.
But
and
she's so clever because she still plays it as someone who is learning as she goes. Do you know what I mean? Her language is still developing. So like when she, you know, says, "I dump your ass."
She's just repeating word for word, isn't she, what Max said?
Yeah, exactly.
She's very childlike in a way because she's so literal, isn't she? But at the same time, she had to grow up so much faster than everyone else because of all the shit that she went through. But as a result, she never learned language and basic interpersonal skills. So, and it was good to see that
so
friendship.
Clever in the first season, all those elements of it where she has no interpersonal skills.
Like she doesn't even know what a friend is. She's never heard the word.
She takes everything very literally, obviously, which is the kind of classic, you know, that means she doesn't always get the humor elements or she doesn't get this and that. But I mean, you know, this season starts off so well because it's quite slow. It's kind of classic Stranger Things where
the first few episodes built a little bit, but I didn't think it was slow, but
not slow, but just kind of classic. Don't introduce the threat until probably episode 3 or 4, you know, just set the groundwork, establish the characters again, you know, maybe introduce new characters and then slowly kind of build up the tension as it always does.
And again, he didn't lean too heavily on, oh, since you last saw everyone in Hawkins, this is what happened. It was just straight in. Dustin's been at camp. You know, Mike and Eleven have been together every day. And again, they didn't spoon, like you said, that they didn't spoon feed you it. You just put two and two together and say, well, we knew that Mike and Elle were going to be together. You don't need to remind us that they were.
Yeah. Exactly. But Mike and Elle are obviously getting to know each other as 15, 16 year olds do. Hopper has a 3-inch policy on the door, and it's just genius. And obviously, Eleven still uses her powers, but obviously less.
I like the way she was using them like a typical stroppy teenager where she's able to slam doors without actually getting up. That was a
nice doors and lock the door and then eventually let him in and they're both just reading comic books.
Yeah, both just chilling out like, what's going on, bro?
The sequence that builds from when, you know, Hopper's, obviously him and Joyce have got a close relationship, they always have had, but he's asking her about parental advice and what to say. And he kind of gets this whole speech from Joyce and practices it and then eventually decides that's not going to work for me because he's not a man that's subtle, let's put it that way.
He's not comfortable with his emotions, is he, let alone talking about sex and relationships with a 15-year-old girl.
So he says that Mike needs to leave because he's got an emergency at home and then he basically threatens him. And then, you know, the next day he's like a man reborn, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, he's dancing around and which was a little bit mean because a lot of people have criticised the way Hopper sort of held up as being a little bit of a hero, but he was being a bit of a dick. Like he was so selfish, even though Elle was miserable. But you see it from his point.
Yeah, all parents do it.
The only way he knows how to deal with things is selfishly and violently and in the most direct way possible. He doesn't know how to be compassionate because he's never really had to, and especially since his family died, he's only really had himself to think about, hasn't he? So having Elle,
him and Eleven, are obviously, you know, it's a big journey that they both go on, and we saw that. I mean, season two heavily kind of did underpin that. It was, you know, he left Eggo's out in the wood and realized
in the trapper box,
and you know, it eventually led to them being kind of classic, difficult father-daughter relationship, but they have evolved a little bit since then. Do you know what I mean? And things have changed.
And it's cute the way he always refers to her comfortably as my daughter. He never stutters or, you know, like my almost daughter. She's his daughter. That's it.
Yeah, and I love that. There was a couple of moments where that was said. And like you said, it's said in passing.
It's so
dramatic.
Powerful when he says it, though, because for him to be able to say that again after losing his daughter, that must mean a lot to him, because that losing her was obviously, it was Sarah, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was the thing that really, really messed him up and made him the alcoholic.
It was a clever point from the first season, along with other things, because you didn't know that until probably second to last episode.
You just thought he was a bit of a dick, didn't you? You never realised why that he'd had this huge trauma.
Yeah.
And she really, Elle, has become a part of his therapy. Between her and Joyce, they are the people that have really, really pulled him out of it and have got him back to being presumably
David,
what he used
David
to be
Harbour,
like.
I just love him in this show. I mean, it's such a shame that the Hellboy thing kind of fell on its arse. I mean, it was always going to happen because I think you can never replicate what Guillermo del Toro
made. It's been too
long
as well. That if they were going to reboot it, it needed to happen years ago. It went stone cold. Yeah. And then you can't just pull it back after that.
No, but I think there's still going to be opportunities for him. And obviously we mentioned the others because, I mean, it's clever traits to get people like Winona Ryder involved because she was royalty in Hollywood for a long period of time.
Well, yeah, especially in the 90s. And she's not done a lot since, has she? Not that
80s,
I can
90s,
think of anyway.
She lost her way a lot. You know, there was a lot of abuse and certainly all that. Remember that very famous shoplifting case and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say she had a lot of legal problems, didn't she?
Yeah, but she's always been an extremely talented actress. I always think back when she was in Edward Scissorhands and those kind of things and she was just like, I don't know. She was just incredible. She was the person revolving around the 80s, 90s. And she was such good casting in this. But her and Hopper just play off each other so well. Their relationship, she's so, you know, because she's grown a lot. She's obviously a very overprotective mum, which is understandable.
Yeah, after everything that's happened, you'd judge her if she wasn't.
But she's always... I don't know, she's always willing to kind of go that next step, do you know what I mean? She's always, you know, and she doesn't let things drop, and it's made for an interesting, you know, she was the one that was pushing it because her magnets fell off her fridge, so she's in the back of her head going straight away, that's not right, why is that not right? Do you know what I mean? She's very untrusting, obviously, and very paranoid, which is understandable, but that plays out so well in their relationship. She kind of stands him up. For a date that she just thought was just a dinner. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I was made up when you went to see the teacher.
I love the teacher.
As soon as Michelle and I saw that, we were like, oh, it's the high school teacher. Because everyone loved him. He was so cool with the kids, wasn't he? And he was proper nerdy trying to make science fun. But they all loved him. And he's one of the many really, really strong side characters that just lifts the show up.
I think that's what this show does so exceptionally well is all of the kind of lesser side characters. Even so, the black policeman who's the kind of, I don't know if he's the deputy, but he's that style, isn't he? He has the odd one-liner and he's brilliant. And the lady who works in the police department that gets him his shirt to wear for that evening.
Yeah.
She's a regular throughout. And all these characters, they've really kept a good like continuity. You know, when you go to, what's the bloody town called? Begins with H.
Hawkins.
When you go to Hawkins, you kind of feel like you know it. You know it front and back. You know the characters. You know the lay of the land a little bit. And it's really good in that. It keeps that kind of continuity. And all these kind of side characters, like you said, they're just great. And the ones they introduced again in this season, like the mayor, it's just like classic.
Yeah, and getting Carrie 80s. Allison.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
When they like opened the door and he went in, I was like, what? That's a big piece of casting. Well, for me, he's always going to be Robin Hood. Yeah. Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Yeah, exactly. But he's obviously done... Yeah, he was big in the 80s, you know what I mean? He was in a lot of 80s shows. And they do so well with that. All the casting, a lot of them are linked to like things that they reference, you know, Easter eggs in the show. So it just leads itself quite naturally to all these Easter eggs. Like Sean Austin was a great part of that in the second season because he's in the Goonies. Do you know what I mean? It's just a classic kind of throwback.
That was horrible.
What a hero.
When they went back to the lab and me and Michelle were both going, oh, that's where Bob died.
I know, exactly.
When they had the picture of Super Bob falling off the fridge.
Oh, man. And they do that without, again, it's subtle enough. Do you know what I mean? It's there to keep you reminded that the characters are still suffering from things like that. Do you know what I mean? Joyce is uncomfortable at getting close to people because they always get hurt. So it's clever. But yeah, there's been some great side characters, as you mentioned. And the mayor was another one of those kind of typical assholes. Small town mayor. You know, you could see him in The Simpsons, or you know, it just fits so closely with that kind of typical, you know, mistake-driven, corrupted, small-town kind of mayor in the States, and it's a clever kind of character that they just play so well on these characters. It really does play out so well. But that, you know, the big talking point and the big kind of thing about it is the mall, basically. It's the new thing that happened a lot in the 80s.
Yeah.
How I Met Your Mother fans will always think of Robin Sparkles when anyone mentions
obviously,
the mall.
Obviously, let's go to the mall.
Exactly. I can't not think of that as soon as I see things like this.
Even just the mention of the word mall.
Yeah,
is exactly. Enough now, because I actually watched that one the other day, the first It's Robin Sparkles Y'all episode.
Oh,
and
it's
I must have seen that about 10, 15 times, and it still kills me.
I think it's my favourite How I Met Your Mother episode. I think, yeah. You know, that and Slapsgiving. it's just genius. There's a lot of good episodes, but like, you know, there's a few standouts. it's just genius. But, you know, the mall is so well designed. Do you know what I mean? It feels entirely authentic. But all the stuff we watched growing up as kids, you know, and we didn't really get that in the UK. We had elements of that stuff, but it's obviously nowhere near as glamorous as it was in America. Do you know what I mean? It's for them, it was all innovative. So everything was new and everything was fresh. And even if you go to the States now, it's not that dissimilar because, you know, that's their shopping experience, isn't it? It's a big thing there. So yeah, you know, you had the equivalent Baskin Robbins, which is Scoops Ahoy, and you had the cinema, and you had all the cafes, and you had JCPenney or whatever. You know, those kind of shops, those classic kind of, and they make it look. I mean, the set design again. We've talked about this on the shows. It's just incredible because
even
they've
the little
gone
details,
to that extra,
the stuff that was on in the cinema when they came out was all films that were out around that time. There was one piece that I actually went. And I'm unashamed
Back to
about
the future,
this.
Obviously. Yeah.
The comics that they showed when Max was having the sleepover with Elle.
Is it Wonder Woman?
Wonder Woman and a Green Lantern. The Green Lantern was out in 1984, and that the Wonder Woman was out in 1985, and this was set in 85. And I know it's only a little detail, but it would have been so easy to just go and get any other comic that wasn't period accurate.
I mean, the Duffer Brothers just,
they care so much about the little things that they make the little things feel like a big thing.
I've never really seen them interviewed, but I need to try and track down some interviews of them because they are just so meticulous with this stuff. I read a tweet, which I don't know word for word, but it said, Stranger Things is more authentic than shows I watched in the 80s.
Yeah,
something along those lines.
Say that.
And it's just so perfect because it's like, this is like 80s nostalgia, but done so realistically well that it's not a gimmick in the slightest. You know what I mean? It genuinely feels like you've been dropped back 34, 35 years
or
whatever.
It feels like a rewatch, doesn't it? It feels like it was shot in the 80s and someone's just unearthed the footage, although somehow it's in glorious 4K, which for the record, it looks incredible in 4K, because especially when they're in the mall, because it's so bright and colourful.
And that's what we needed, the fairground as well.
Oh, yeah, all the stuff at night in the fairground.
But they do very clever things, because they go, look, if we want a bit of atmosphere, let's throw in a thunderstorm as we like. Do you know what I mean? And they, you know, they've done that obviously quite well in this season.
Yeah.
The scene in the rain I was going to mention earlier on, that scene outside the garage is one of the most beautiful shots of anything I've seen in a long time. The lighting and the way it was shot, I'm just like, Christ, man, you know, this is a story driven show and obviously all about the, you know, the horror and comedy elements of it, but it looks amazing. Like you said, they really ramped it up this season in terms of they spent a lot longer in between the series.
And you can see where that time's gone
summer.
As well.
Yeah.
It's not like
the CGI is really upped as well because they've got a lot more to work with.
Yeah.
Such a bigger scale.
Especially when you see the that big, horrible, squelchy monster. That thing looked... Because the first Demogorgon looked a little bit cheesy.
A little shady, I'd say, going back to it. It probably doesn't look as realistic or effective.
It looks
a bit
dated.
I thought the Demogorgon... This is spoilers. I mean, Jesus, if you're listening to this, you've watched it. But obviously the Demogorgon at the end that we
looks
get to see in
so
the Russian
much
lab.
Better. The way it moves.
Looks badass, yeah.
I went back and watched some of the early footage. The way the Demogorgons moved was a little bit blocky and sticky.
It was blocky. Yeah, but it wasn't GoldenEye blocky, but it was a little bit.
It looked like a lizard or a reptile, the way it was moving and the way it came slinking out of that thing at the end. Michelle said to me as well something that was interesting. Wonder how many people didn't even realise that was a post-credit scene. Because you traditionally don't get them, but it's something you do actually get quite a lot on Netflix.
Black Mirror, they do it a lot.
And they did it on a lot of the Marvel shows, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Like at the end of one of the, I think it was Daredevil Season 2, we got a trailer for The Punisher.
Daredevil 2 and 3, I think we got one.
And there was one that we got where we saw the first sign of Luke Cage. And so, yeah. I mean, it's just ingrained into us, isn't it? You know,
you finish your show. And
you
also,
sit and wait until the clock hits 0:00. You don't just assume it's finished.
That's that, and also I don't read every name, but there's something about watching a show and then just letting it absorb. Do you know what I mean? I know when you're binging, you're just, you know, clicking through it.
Yeah.
But at the end of a show, after watching, you know, incredible season of television, you just kind of want to, I don't know, I don't ever switch it off straight away. I kind of just let it sit. And I mean, this show, it's the kind of show everyone just wants to go straight onto social media and just get excited about and find all the GIFs and stuff, because obviously, with a TV show on streaming platform, everything is then released straight away.
Yeah.
So it's not like a film where you have to wait 6 months for the great kind of quality content. You know, the GIFs are incredible, and there's so many moments in this, so many brilliant moments that I've just got in GIF form or photos or whatever.
And a lot of them center around the same people, don't they? It's a lot of Dustin, Robin, and of course, the hero of the hour, Steve Harrington.
Steve,
who has undergone one of the most iconic redemption arc character transformations. He's gone from the ultimate arsehole in season one to being the reluctant hero in season two to being just the most charismatic, brilliant, friendly young man in season three.
Joe Carey, it's just got to be one of the coolest guys around. Do you know what I mean? It just, I don't know how he pulls it off, but he's such a great guy. I keep looking out for him thinking, God, what's he going to be? You know, what's he going to be casting? Because he looks like he's primed for, you know, hitting the big time, really.
The age that he's at, and with coming off the back of something like this, you've got to think that he's got something big coming up in the next few years. Same as we said about David Harbour.
Well,
it was no surprise that he got the Hellboy gig.
He's casting a film with Jodie Comer, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, because she's very... very hot at the minute, isn't she?
With Ryan Reynolds, with Taika Waititi, with Channing Tatum. It's this thing directed by a guy called Sean Levy, who was a producer on Stranger Things, a producer on Arrival, a few shows. He's not, I don't think he's actually directed anything yet, but it's a film project due next year. Next summer, it's an action adventure.
Is it a Netflix thing?
I don't think so. I think it's a full cinema release.
Right, okay.
So it just looks, a bank teller discovers that he's actually an NPC inside a brutal open world video game. It just sounds incredible. It's just like all those casts, you know. I think Jodie Comer and him together could just be like,
I'm thinking Jodie Comer and Ryan Reynolds together.
Yeah, there's some good people involved. Taika Waititi in anything.
Well,
he's
not
directing or
Taika
producing,
Waititi
but just
could sell fucking paint and it'd be incredible.
He's an amazing man. But, you know, there's some... Yeah, so, you know, these kind of actors, you're thinking, you know, obviously Millie Bobby Brown's done the Godzilla films and obviously is you know, linked with everything. I would imagine she will pop up in Marvel at some
point.
She
is a lot of people's pick if it ever happens to play a young... Princess Leia, because she does have a startling resemblance to a young Carrie Fisher.
I think they might move on from that in terms of the Star Wars universe a little bit, but I could see that. And obviously Finn Wolfhard, is that his name? He's got a ridiculously cool name. He's in It, and he's in It 2, and he's in the Ghostbusters film, which is coming out.
And he's in a band as well, so when he's not filming, he's touring.
Oh, they can all sing, you know. You know, Dustin's got a great voice. They did like a...
they did Uptown Funk, didn't they? At the VMAs or something a couple of years ago, and every single one of them's got a... Caleb Lachlan, who plays Lucas,
cool
he's
guy.
Got a fantastic voice.
I love that he's always got his slingshot.
He's almost always wearing a bandana.
Yeah, he's a cool guy. He's a cool guy. We'll talk about the characters and how they split in a minute. But like we're saying, it's set up really well this season. It's got the classic kind of summer tropes of the pool. So we get the poolside,
yeah,
where all the MILFs, as they might be known back in the day, are all waiting for. I can't remember what he's called.
Billy.
Waiting for Billy to basically come in and take over his shift as the lifeguard. And the first thing he does is he yells at the fat kid, which is quite funny.
Yeah.
And then basically just rules a roost from there. And he's basically coming on to one of their mums, isn't
Mike's
he?
Mike's mum.
Yeah, Mike's mum.
Cara Buono.
Yeah, and she's quite popular from this season, from what people have said online.
Yes, yeah, I wonder why. Well, she did like a little viral video of the jazzercise telling people the importance of stretching and stopping when you're doing binge watching of a TV show.
They do some really clever shit, you know, the promotion on these things. Have you seen, just before I forget, have you seen the Scoops Ahoy ice cream van that's going around the country?
No.
It's going to Manchester on Monday.
What?
Yeah, have a look at it online. It's an ice cream van, all Scoops Ahoy. They're giving out free ice cream, and it's got like, you know, aliens coming out the side of it. It looks really cool. It's a really cool promotion.
Oh my God, I've just found a thing for it. Oh my God, that looks so good.
It's going to a place called Hawkins Close, which is like North Manchester. It's not quite near you, but it's not far away.
It's visiting 10 Hawkins roads around the UK.
Yeah. It might be in the city centre as well, but there's a Hawkins somewhere or other in like Cheetham Hill-ish way, but it's not a million miles away.
Oh yeah, Hawkins Close, Manchester, and Hawkins Street, Liverpool. Oh, that is so cool.
I know, it's awesome, isn't it?
But that's the kind of thing, doing this viral stuff when it's already been released,
yeah,
just to keep it going.
It's the kind of thing that I will watch. I would want to watch it again now, to be honest.
I want to go back and watch the first season again.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, you really should. Because the first season is, I mean, people are now saying this is better, and I'd argue it is, but the first season is so, so well done. It's such a great season. And two still has its moments, do you know what I mean? I know it's a little bit disappointing, but it's only in comparison to this. I think this has just been so,
that's
just
the
up the ante. Do you
when,
know what I mean?
When they're the just... bar has been set that high,
exactly,
it's always going to be difficult.
Exactly, but they just do everything right in this season. So, like you said, they have the emotional kind of depth to it. They have the characters really developed, and then they just, you know, they up the horror levels. If you ask me, a little bit.
Oh, there's definitely.
Some quite intense, quite scary moments.
Anything to do with the steel mill, because it was like Jaws, wasn't it? You did, and the modern Godzillas. It was what you don't see. It's just the noises and the implication of what the hell. Is in,
and the violence
down those stairs.
It's subtle enough, but occasionally it hits quite hard. So
yeah,
when you know, Billy is taking over the other lifeguard,
Heather.
I can't remember her name, Heather, and she basically goes to take over her parents as such, or knock them out.
Yeah,
she smacks her dad around the head with a wine bottle and stuff. It's quite, you know, some of the violence is quite straight hitting stuff. It's not
implied, is it? It's subtle, but you know, there is blood and there is bits of gore and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah,
so it should, because at the end of the day, it is fundamentally like a sci-fi horror, isn't it?
Yeah, the only two characters I don't think had a lot to do. Well, they did enough. I should always look up the names of these people. The two that were working at the newspaper, the sister.
Nancy and Jonathan. I thought Nancy had a lot more to do in this one.
Possibly. Yeah, possibly. I mean, yeah, maybe not Jonathan so much. I don't know if that's because of his antics. He wasn't very popular after the last season, because I certainly know he didn't turn up for one of the award shows because he got banned from getting on the plane through drunken disorderly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he, you know, sometimes that does impact on things in terms of writing and those kind of things. But he's a British actor, I think. That guy,
yeah, he
actually.
Is.
So, yeah.
I was watching a video before of the cast were all taking a BuzzFeed quiz about which Stranger Things character they are, and I didn't actually realise he was English. I assumed he was American.
He was born in 1994 in Bridlington, East Yorkshire.
Bloody hell. Northern lad.
Northern lad, he is Yorkshire lad. You wouldn't know it. He puts on a hell of an accent, considering that, to be honest. But no, I mean, he didn't have a lot to do, but I thought the office dynamic was quite funny because it was your typical chauvinistic 80s, you know, treat women like they're slaves and they can only make tea, do you know what I mean, or do run errands. And Nancy, you know, being the typical kind of rebellious person, she is, goes against that. And it does have quite an important storyline, at least introducing that woman and the rats and, you know, and realizing that they're feeding on things to make them, I don't know, stronger. It's a strange kind of side plot, isn't it? How the mind flayer is kind of taking over things and what they're
and
doing.
And they never really fully explained the...
That's why I was about to launch into it and then realised, I don't really know the answer to what I'm talking about. Because, yeah, why did they eat all the compost and the weird stuff?
It's... The only thing I've put two and two together is that maybe... Because one of the kids, I think it might have been Lucas, was... When they were trying to explain it, one of them said, what did they learn in science class? That's when you put things together, you know, you sometimes make a new compound or a new element. So I think the idea was that the big monster that they created needed the fertilizer
needed
and all the chemicals.
To become that. So,
So
when
it
kind
it
of
was
formed
made up
together.
Of all the composite chemicals plus all the biological matter.
That kind of makes sense. They did a really good job of growing that monster. It looked authentic throughout.
It
do you know what I mean? You
had horrible.
Yeah, it did. I mean, obviously Nancy was quite heavily involved in the hospital scene as well, in fairness. So they did have parts to the play, but I think with this, you go back and think, well, who didn't have a lot of screen time? Actually, no one really. They all did. I think the main kids probably didn't get quite as much as you'd think. It was a lot more revolving, you know, around Hopper and that element of it with the Russians and things we'll talk about. But the main group was really, you know, the Scoops Ahoy team.
Yeah. The boys, for the first time, they were all pulled apart, weren't they? It was strange to see them. But,
they
mean,
must have struggled a little bit with that to try and get the dynamics right. But I think they realise, I mean, the big thing to come out of season two was that Steve and Dustin together are just gold,
and it's no surprise that they've taken that and said, yeah, we've had some constructive feedback and criticism in season two. The one thing that surely was unanimously agreed on was we need more of this, and it makes total sense that they've gone, right, we maybe need to put the other three boys aside a little bit to get Steve and Dustin together. And my God, did it work, because everyone has to have loved that. I mean, all the jokes that Robin's making out of it, basically implying that he's a bit of a nonce because he's friends with all these kids, and you know, it's subtle.
It's your kids are here again, do you know what I mean? And then she keeps saying,
"How many kids are
you
friend
know?
With?"
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
and it's implied, and even he's looking, thinking, "Shit, I used to be the cool kid, and now I'm just hanging around with all these kids, serving people ice cream, sneaking them into the cinema. What's gone wrong?"
You've mentioned her there, and I'd say without doubt, Maya Hawke is the new, you know, great new character.
She's
in the
new Steve, and the eldest child of Ethan Hawke and
Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman, that's the one.
I mean,
couldn't remember.
She was destined probably to become a pretty good actor. You know, if you are of that genetic pool, I think you think you're probably going to have it in you to be, you know, a good answer.
Mildly talented.
And yeah,
once
I would say
you know
so.
About it, you don't have to see Ethan Hawke in it.
Jeez, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't see much of Uma.
No.
I know they've not been together for a long time.
I think she's got her mum's cheekbones or something, but
yeah, there's something along
very,
those lines.
Because Uma Thurman's got a bit of a weird-shaped face.
Yeah, I see Ethan Hawke all day.
Yeah,
all
it's
day.
Basically small girl Ethan Hawke. But, you know, again, he's not exactly, you know,
she is so good, though. You know, she, yeah, exactly.
She was brilliant. And she worked well with them because she's so dry and sarcastic, whereas they've got this total bromance going on, and she's just there to gatecrash it.
The secret, she just is given the side eye for the first, like, four episodes. You know, she's constantly going, what are these guys doing? Do you know what I mean? Like when they first meet.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
Like, Henderson. He's like, you got the job, man. You got the job. And he's there and they do that lightsaber battle and then he spills his guts and it's just hilarious.
It's so
man.
Cheesy and cringeworthy.
it just, I love those two together. They play out so well. And obviously their relationship, her and Steve's relationship, is probably the relationship in the series, because they have the most, you know, it's Steve's kind of really, kind of like you said, he's gone on the biggest arc, I would say, of any of the characters.
Yeah.
But by quite a considerable margin, especially in this season. Because the other boys are just growing up. They're doing what boys do. And the girls are doing that to the same extent, 11 as well, you know. I'd say Hopper's gone on a significant enough journey as well. But you've got to look at Steve as the guy who's really changed. He was the jock. Do you know what I mean? He was the jock. He wasn't the smartest, but he was a popular kid in class. Do you know what I mean? He was that guy. And she says that a lot when they have those conversations. And the smart U-turn in all of it is that he thinks he loves her because someone's showing him attention, basically. And actually, no, she never was obsessed with him. She was obsessed with a girl that was obsessed with him. Do you know what I mean? So they did really play that out, I thought, exceptionally well, because everyone would have been screaming to get those two together. It's the natural feeling of society. It's what people do when they watch these stuff. They want a happy ending for the characters they love. And actually, I thought they did that really well, that they're friends, and that's what Steve needed more, really.
Yeah, he needed someone to help him feel better about himself.
Yeah, to just kind of make him realise who he is, rather than just, you know, I don't know, I'm not trying to go too deep, but he's basically not, he's not just needs to chase women all the time, but she needs to keep him grounded.
Yeah.
I mean, the chart she makes, which she says is for important business, why are you guys stealing my chart? And it was you rule. And it was 0-6 because he keeps striking out. It's just genius. You know, he's there in his awful outfit and he's like, I need to lose a hat. The hat's not working. And she's like, well, what about company policy? And he's like, screw company policy.
Yeah, he's hiding his best feature.
Exactly. The hair is everything with Steve Harrington. But he was a great character. And the sequences when they're on the drugs in the underground base and stuff, it's just priceless. And that scene in the toilets, and they're just off their face.
The scene in the toilets was really, really nice as well, because she thinks that he's going to hate her, because obviously, bearing in mind this point in time, a lot of people were still even more close-minded than they are now about
exactly.
being gay. And she fires the line back at him, doesn't she? Like, did you pass out on me or did you die on me? And he's really not asked about the fact that she's gay. And then he just turns it round to, yeah, she's all right, but, you know, you can do better. She's not that good looking. And
exactly.
Because you would have expected a couple of years ago that Steve would have been like, you're a queer or something, and been really horrible about it. But now he really doesn't care, because he knows that she's a really nice person. And like you've said, it's what he needed. He just needed someone to just like him for him, rather than just because he was the cool kid.
It was just priceless, that whole sequence of them going through the come downs and the highs of the drugs. And do you know what I mean? It was when they're in the cinema watching Back to the Future and they have no clue what's going on. And there's just so many great elements to this. It's their relationship was so clever. And Steve once again got the shit kicked out of him, which happens every time.
Yeah.
The guy just keeps going.
Although he did finally win a fight.
He did finally win a fight against
the Russian soldier.
It was, he smacked him around the head with a phone, and he did it really smooth, like, in fairness to him. It looked really good. But yeah, it was really funny when they got into that position in the base and stormed into that room and like, right, we're finally free. And that guy just turns around on his swivel chair and it's just like, oh shit. It's just crazy, because they get to that base and they think, oh, it'll just be a small underground facility. And they realize it's like 100 people down there and armed soldiers and all this kind of stuff. And it is crazy what's gone on with it. It's a really clever kind of classic conspiracy theory kind of take. And it was actually real.
And it was nice the way they scaled up the action from just being the lab to like full on Russian state secrets and stuff.
It was a nice
logical progression of it.
Well, she was decoding the messages, wasn't she? And they were going on a spy mission to try and find out what was going on. And it just made their lives a bit more interesting, because they're just in these boring dead-end jobs, you know what I mean? Just giving out free ice cream to annoying children. They played that out really well. I mean, those characters were great. And we also got other new character and returning character. We can say Erica at this stage. Yeah, exactly. Erica.
You can't spell America without Erica. She's right.
She, she's got some great lines, man. She's bribing them into going into the hole.
Operation Child Endangerment.
Two torches strapped to her head, you know what I mean? Strapped to her helmet. She was brilliant, actually. I mean, we've known her from season two. She's Lucas's little sister, isn't she?
And she's a right little shit.
Oh, God. And her relationship, again, with Dustin, where he basically points out that she's an actual nerd because she can do mathematics extremely well.
And because she watches My Little Pony.
And he's like, and she's like, how do you know a lot about My Little Pony? He's like, because I'm a nerd. It's genius. So that little team was like my favourite of the teams. But I did love the Soviet Union team where you've got Hopper and Joyce. And then Murray in the kind of Russian outfits. And obviously, R.I.P. Alexei, who is...
Poor old character.
What a character. Again, like, you know, you don't watch Fleabag, but Murray is an arsehole in that, basically. He plays the sister's husband, and he's brilliant. He's a really good actor. But in this... He's just such a brilliant character. I mean, I think he was season two as well.
He was briefly
season one.
He was there when...
He was mainly season two.
Nancy and Jonathan stayed at his, and they humped in his spare room.
That yeah, exactly.
When they got it together, because they were...
Yeah, they all started drinking vodka. And yeah, and he's so dry and so clever. And he's obviously the ultimate conspiracy theorist.
He's a typical classic conspiracy nut, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And when they turn up at his house and... You know, he opens the door and he's got his shotgun pointed at their face, and he speaks to Russian, you know, he speaks Russian to him, and they just, it's a great sequence, that, because their relationship and how things develop with Alexei and him, you know, they become extremely good friends because they have to hang out for quite a long time in that small confined space. And he's obviously translating everything, and he likes his humor because he's calling things... He's calling Hopper like Fat Rambo, which is really funny. Sequences like that. And obviously the major one where, you know, they all have their burgers, and he gets his slushy from 7-Eleven, and it's not cherry flavoured and all that kind of stuff. It's like, no deal, unless it's strawberry. I don't like strawberry. Or no cherry. I don't know, whatever it was.
He wants cherry and he's giving strawberry and he's absolutely furious.
Yeah, and Hopper's just doing his classic kind of, you know, stamping his feet, being a child kind of approach to things. Throws the keys at him. He breaks free and he's like, no, he's not going to drive off. Give him 5 minutes, he'll turn around, you know what I mean? And he already did that with Joyce, you know, in the living room where he's getting changed, and he thinks, why are you not listening to me, Joyce? Yeah. You know, all this kind of stuff. You didn't turn up on my date, you went to see the science teacher, do you have a thing for him now? All that kind of stuff. And she just walks off, she doesn't care. And we think, right, he's gonna drive away. Is he gonna let him go away? Surely not. And then he just throws him the keys and he's like, I like strawberry too, or whatever. It's just brilliant, that whole sequence. And that was a big part of it, you know, Hopper and that part of it was probably a good couple of episodes full of their development, I'd say. And obviously it was interesting how it's going to play out and leading towards the fun fair. And I must admit, Murray and Alexei at the fun fair, it's probably one of my favourite moments of the season.
Yeah, total bro fest. And he sort of starts to realise, doesn't he, maybe American capitalism isn't that bad after all.
Well, Murray tells him, look, these machines are rigged, you're never going to win, do you know what I mean? But, you know, you knock yourself out, here's some tickets, have some fun. And Alexei's there at the, you know, the darts, popping balloons and having to get five in a row, and all the kids around him giving him high fives, and he wins the giant Woody Woodpecker. And it's like, oh, this moment's amazing. Look on his face. He's the happiest man in the world. And, you know, Murray turns around to congratulate him, two corn dogs in his hand. And that moment, Alexei gets shot. And it's like, oh, man.
By the Russian Terminator.
Yeah, he was the Terminator.
He had a bit of a look of the T-1000 for me.
He really did. Yeah, he really felt Terminator-esque. Which is fine, you know, but it did feel a little bit tropey, you know. That's the one thing I would say. He was like, this guy is like the Terminator.
Indestructible Russian.
Yeah, certainly indestructible for a long period of time anyway. He was just, you know, Hopper did fight back occasionally, but it wasn't easy. But that played out quite well. But all the while, I think, you know, I'm trying to think what happened with 11 in the series and what happened with Mike. Obviously, they broke up, albeit momentarily, and their relationship and obviously Max's relationship developed with 11, which was great. They had those great sequences at the mall where 11's getting some new gear and they're having their photos taken and all that kind of stuff.
Plastic 80s makeover.
Oh, it was brilliant. And it was great because 11 did need to be not just with Mike, because Mike was the first person she was introduced to when she was out of the facility, you know? And so her world kind of operated around him. And it was good for her to, you know, and he said that at some point in the show where he's like, it's nice that you've made a friend and you've got other people and that kind of thing, which was great. But their relationship was obviously then built around the brother and the suspicion around the brother. And they were all, like you said, fragmented. Like, there wasn't many times when all the characters were together.
It was only really right towards the end, wasn't it, when they all arrived at the
mall. Yeah.
Because it really was a tale of two halves. It was Team Scoops and Team whatever the hell you want to call the rest of them.
Exactly.
It's all about Team Scoops, though.
It is all about
Team Scoops. I want a spin-off just of those three, even if they're just working in Scoops Ahoy. I just want to see more of it. Get us to the summer job.
Well, Scoops Ahoy's gone, isn't it, towards the end? Aren't they going to work in the film?
Oh, yeah, he got a job in the film store, which presumably is meant to be like an early blockbuster or something.
Yeah, that's what it was going towards. What have we got? Team Bald Eagle, Team Scoops Troop, and then something
Bald
else.
Bald Eagle.
Exactly.
He just calls sign.
There's some great lines. I mean, Erica saying, I'm 10, you bald bastard, was quite a classic in there. What are the other team called? Oh, it says Team Griswold Family, but I don't know what that reference is. But yeah, they were all together at one point, the family in the mall. And obviously, at that point, the danger is the giant. Is he still a mind flayer or is he a different beast at this stage? I kind of got a bit caught up in that. I know they were calling them the flayed, you know, the people that have been turned, basically.
Still the mind flayer. It's just this is the first time we've seen its physical form, whereas when we saw it as a shadow, that wasn't like
it was always in Will's head, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And he did have a certain amount of power, but because
he was still in the upside down.
Because it got closed, he couldn't actually get out, whereas at this point he was actually physical.
That sequence was really, really good, where you actually saw when the portal got closed, he didn't die. He just basically disintegrated because he lost his connection.
Yeah.
But then
all that extremely well, actually.
Yeah, as soon as they open that portal, he just rematerializes into the smoke. But then his full form, he needed a host to get him. Because what was the line he says when he first meets? He was like, build me what I need, or build me what you see. And what he saw was an army of human hosts.
Yeah, and they did well, like, creating that kind of army as it developed. You know, Billy was quite a sinister character because he was a bastard in the second series, as you know, and he certainly had violent tendencies. But they did a really good job with 11. You know, 11 kind of, the mind flayer then saw 11, obviously, when she went into Billy's mind.
Yeah.
And that was good. That was quite a creepy sequence. And
it was very reminiscent of the Night King, I thought.
Yeah, I felt that.
He became aware of her presence, but also aware of her powers. And they were both able to track each other. It was really clever. But again,
without actually coming out and saying,
oh no, he can track me and stuff like that. It was clever.
And how the mind flayer had developed from just being, you know, because they obviously trapped Billy in the sauna and expected that they could just kind of sweat it out of him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that wasn't possible in this case because he was more than that. He'd become more of an entity. And those sequences when she was looking into Billy's past was really good. You know, the sequence on the beach.
It was subtle the way they did it as she starts off at the beach, she's at his happiest memory before he got corrupted. And then as she gets closer and closer to the eye of the storm, she goes through more and more really horrible memories, and you start seeing why Billy is such a dick, because after his mum died, his whole life just completely fell to pieces, including having Max dropped on his doorstep one day, like,
exactly,
this is your new sister.
So yeah, and the second series was off. Very much about, oh, you know, look after Max. And he was like, well, who is Max to me? Do you know what I mean? They certainly weren't close together. It was,
and now we see it looks like his, I got the impression, I interpreted it as his dad fucked off, had another family, and then came back and was like, oh, this is your sister.
Oh, yeah.
11, 12 years old, she's your responsibility now.
Yeah, and he hated every second of that in the second season. It really did play out that way. But he went out in a heroic fashion, which was good, and she genuinely cared at that moment. And it did feel, you know, but he was always a threat. That sequence where, you know, they're in the parking lot, you know, outside, and he's about to basically run them down, and Steve comes to the rescue in the car, just derails him at the last second. But he's still a threat. You know, it was clever how they played that. And, you know, it did feel like we said before, obviously the humour felt really great in this season, but they did ramp up some of the danger moments. You know, they did make it more of a threat, and you know, obviously Alexei was a character that you did suddenly care about, but not a main character, but they did put them in jeopardy. You know, it wasn't all, you know, Eleven wasn't winning like she normally does. It was harder, it was difficult, and she was injured in the process, and it made a big difference. And you know, we see towards the end of the season that we don't know what state she's in terms of her powers and who she's become, and it's really changed things. But I mean, we've got to talk about Hopper. We talked about him before. Obviously, you can make a famous stupid prediction, but if we're just being transparent and saying he's gone and that's it, they did that really well. And that letter that Eleven reads is quite heartbreaking.
Oh, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
I don't think he's dead, because I can't logically think of who else the American could be.
No,
but when the actual sequence was going on, you see him. He looks at the pathway that he can't get past because of the machine, and it's you know, it's firing this energy. And then he turns around and he looks at the gate. And to me, I read that as being like a, well, it's either instant death or see what's on the other side of there. And you never actually saw him get vaporized. You never you never saw him explode like you did with all the other scientists.
I was going to say, obviously, the scientists at the beginning are all, you know, exploded into a trillion pieces, essentially. And it's a very different, but that was a slightly different style of explosion. As you said, this was different. The machine was working and they shut it down from the core.
Well, he's the one who fucked it up, didn't he? Because he squished the Russian Terminator on the machine. And that's what blocked off his exit.
Yeah, but you know, he was being heroic. He was doing what Hopper does. Do you know what I mean? But it's going to be interesting. I don't think he's done yet. I think they've set it up really well for season four when it comes. But I don't think we'll be getting that anytime soon.
I would guess it's going to be at least 2 years.
I think a couple of years sounds about right.
Not three. I mean, it's all going to depend on who. Who's busy with
what,
isn't
it? It won't be free. It won't be free. I don't think enough of them have got enough projects in the works that they're going to be blocking their progress. Because this is the big thing, like you said, it's broken records again. It's Netflix's kind of key show. I think it always has been. And they put a lot behind it in terms of the marketing, in terms of the budget. Because, like we said, a lot of practical sets, a lot of great CG, some really good actors that are probably on decent wages now that it's become such a popular show. But I mean, you've got to give, like we said before, the Duffer Brothers. I'm not sure what they've done in the past. I haven't really looked at their body of work, but they clearly know the 80s. And in the other seasons, obviously, it's leaned very heavily on Poltergeist and Ghostbusters and I don't know, E.T.
I was going to say E.T. Goonies. An E.T. moment.
There's a lot of those moments in the other seasons, and there are still in this. But for me, what they've done in this season in particular is they've kind of evolved past it, and they're kind of creating their own dynamic, if that makes sense. It's the kind of thing that now it's kind of weird that you could see the 80s revival in another 20 years and Stranger Things will be referenced rather than Ghostbusters. Do you know what I mean? So it's so authentic and so real that you can see this being used as a reference point. It's creating another section of pop culture that is already riffing off something else, you know, in the past. So it's so clever. Like, it's, I don't know, we've talked about these kind of key things this year, which is Game of Thrones and obviously Avengers culminating this huge, you know, game-changing moment in pop culture, like Infinity War did with the snap and all that kind of stuff, which is really huge for our generation and moving forward, you know, our future generations and stuff. But Stranger Things is up there for me. I don't think there's anything else that's delivered almost as consistently as this has, and seemingly getting better. I mean, that's the thing about it. I think this season is one of the finest things I've... It ranks up there with any of the finest seasons of any show that I've ever watched, to be honest.
Yeah, I can go with that.
It's just so enjoyable. I loved nearly every second of it. And I just, like I said, I don't normally, when I watch these things, because you binge them, you're like, right, wow, that, you know, that was great. And it's great to talk about it. But then it's done. For this time, I just want to go back and watch it again because it's just so superbly done. And I don't know, those new characters and just Team Scoop, man, all the way. Yeah. Just Scoops Ahoy, just the best team, the best characters that I've, you know, Dustin and Steve together are just perfect. So, yeah, I loved every second of it.
Yeah, you can't really beat them. Their interactions throughout the whole thing were just so genuine. It did feel like a real... I mean, the whole show feels like they are actually a group of best friends, and they probably are now because, you know, you look at, say, Maisie Turner and Maisie Williams and Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones. You know, they are like sisters now because they started as kids and they became women on the show. And that's something that a lot of people can't really understand. So the sort of five or six of them probably are really close friends. Charlie Heaton and Natalia Dyer have been together for a couple of years now since they met on the show. Because, again, you know, close working environment. So it's just a feel good show, isn't it? And especially for us being 80s kids, it just harks back to all the stuff that we really, really do love.
And it has done that. It's done such a clever... You know, we said some of it's subtle, some of it's bloody not. It's right in your face. But it like we said, it feels genuine. It's reminiscent of all the things we loved growing up, but it's also new enough and fresh enough that it's got its own ideas and it's got its own, you know, it's got its own thing that keeps you coming back to it. Because if it was just a rip-off, you wouldn't care. Do you know what I mean? If it was just a rip-off and it wasn't so well scripted, so well kind of directed, and the characters weren't characters you love, then there wouldn't be this kind of buzz about it. There wouldn't be this many people invested in it. I think it's because the characters that you love, you know, have again, like you said, kind of grown up watching a little bit because you've seen them go from age 10, 11, which is pretty young, to being on screen, you know, to being like 15, 16. And it was funny this because it's supposed to be 8 months after the second season. All the boys have grown about a foot and a half.
Yeah.
It's like,
you really notice whenever you see them with Winona Ryder, who's quite short, and all of a sudden you're going, Mike's basically as tall as you, if not taller.
We almost got to the end of this and we haven't mentioned Dustin's girlfriend or the never-ending story.
Oh my God, Michelle was cringing so hard at that. She was like, oh God, I want it to stop.
I loved it. I thought it was genius.
It was cheesy as hell, but, you know, it's a cheesy show and it was 80s as hell, so...
I kind of got it. It needed something cheesy to break it because it was... What it does, this show, is when it's kind of serious emotional hitting points, it often... has to cut away with something so absurdly comic.
It needs something to snap your back, doesn't it?
Yeah. And Dustin realizing that she was a make believe, which I thought she might have been his girlfriend.
I really didn't think we'd ever get to see her. I thought it was always going to be one of those sticking points of she's really, really real. Yeah.
Yeah. And he kept saying how pretty she was and how smart she was. Obviously, they met at tech camp or geek camp, whatever the hell he was doing.
Camp Know How or Camp Know All.
Yeah, and it was essentially, you know, she was the one that needed to break the code. But she wouldn't do that. She wouldn't forgive him without him singing the Neverending Story tune.
Perfectly
and
I harmonized, just, you've got to say.
Yeah, and it was just, it was the reaction on all of their faces because they've all got the CV radio working and they were all looking at it going, it was Hopper's face especially that just absolutely broke me. It just was like, what the hell am I just watching? Do you know what I mean? It was one of those surreal moments that really kind of, yeah, it's cheesy as hell, but I kind of loved it, you know, and I thought it was just great to realize that Dustin has a girlfriend and they're horribly affectionate and disgusting with each other, but you know, it's nice that he's happy. Do you know what I mean? It's nice that he's actually found someone.
For me, the best reaction, it was Murray. Murray, yeah, just looked so uncomfortable to be hearing this coming across his radio while he's trying to do this incredibly bloody stupid dangerous thing in the middle of a secret Russian base.
We said a little bit about Murray, but how good is he in this?
He was really good.
He's just so good. Like, I know they're all great actors, but for me, he just delivers his lines so impeccably well. You know, he's such on the brink of madness, but he has those moments, you know, when he shares the vodka with Hopper, and it's just that great moment where they knock a couple of back together. And I know he did that in season two as well. And it just, you know, to build that relationship with Alexei, that you care about both of them and their relationship so quickly, it's so clever. You know, you can't get past that. They've only been in, what, two episodes together, I think, in this, and you suddenly have this deep underlying relationship there that you genuinely care about. I don't know many shows that can do that with a new character, and that's why I think this was so good, that I think the new characters you appreciate as much as the old ones, and not many shows can do that. Not many shows can introduce you to
like that and
shake it up and then still get you caring as much about the new ones as you did about the old ones.
When it's already got all those hours with a big roster anyway, you know, there is quite a lot of main and supporting characters. So to then keep piling new ones in and to make it stick, but that's why it works so well, because they don't just, they're not throwing them in for gratuity, either. They put in Robin for a reason. Yeah. They put in Max for a reason. They put in Murray last season. Again, another thing that maybe season two was servicing a later plot point. They needed to get Murray in so that this season we'd know, I remember that guy. That's the crazy wacko nut job from last year. Rather than, if they'd done that now, that would have maybe taken an episode to win.
You're right. You can't throw in, say, Alexei is the Russian scientist and then also Murray. It's
too much, because then half the people in the scene are brand new and you're going, well, now I've got to give a shit about two of you instead of just one of you.
Yeah, and you've been to Murray's house before, so you know the environment. You kind of know what you're getting into. And as soon as they say, I know a guy that speaks Russian or whatever, I kind of thought, right,
when they were outside and they saw the camera. I didn't remember his name, but it was like, it's that weirdo from last year where...
Exactly.
When Nancy and Jonathan were humping in his room.
Yeah, and it's one of those with that they... Like you said, in the other series, they have set up things. They not only do they hark back to things in the 80s, they're very clever at the things that they've done in the other seasons, because they do refer back to stuff quite a lot of the time. Do you know what I mean? And that relationship, as you mentioned, with things like D&D. And it's clever because you remember that first season when they've been playing D&D for the first time, and they're also in shock that they such geeks, do you know what I mean? Yeah. They introduce the Fetal Hydra and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. I mean, I never played D&D, so I'm not quite down with it. But, you know, you knew the type, and, you know, everyone's kind of grown up playing board games, or, you know, everyone's done things like that, played video games, computer games like we do and all that kind of stuff. So it's cool because they were such close friends, and that was their relationship. They'd spend days and days in his basement playing D&D without actually seeing the light of day, and it's all developed, you know, their whole world's been rocked and turned upside down. But, you know, it's so clever that it does just center still around Hawkins when they, in season two, when they started to move to New York, and I thought, okay, what they're going to try and do is go, right, we've done the small town, we're going to do big city and introduce new elements to it, but where this show really succeeds is keeping it small town.
Yeah.
It's what makes the most impact because, you know, it's where the characters you love are and they're all together. But it also, you know, you feel like you've grown up in that town, even though, you know, we've never been near a town like that in the States, I don't think, unless you have. But, you know, for me, you know, I've not ever been near a place like that in America. But because we've grown up with that around us, because of all the films we've watched and all the things we've, you know, seen in our lives, it feels familiar. And that's what they've done. They've made everything feel like it's a town that you know. It's a town that you've kind of grown up in, but, you know, recognize every aspect of
it. Well, I recognize that because I grew up in a little town, so I'm used to that.
Even more rural than that.
That yeah, smaller exactly. mentality. But it would have been too easy to have it take place in New York or San Francisco or Boston or something like that. It's nice that they went for a little rural place because then it's a lot more believable, isn't it, to have Hopper as the local sheriff of a place where the most interesting thing that happens is, like, you know, a cow fell over or something.
Yeah, and you mad conspiracy theorists who would relate back to a town rather than the big city. Do you know what I mean? That's what they do. It makes sense. And the small town kind of, you know, means that much more.
Especially somewhere that's seemingly so backwards as well. It's really in the middle of absolute nowhere, and it is a little bit. You get a bit of an image,
and a lot of America is. It's, you know, a lot of America is. It's the middle of nowhere. It's a huge country. There's a lot of towns like this where there's one road in and one road out. You know, and it wouldn't reach national press. It wouldn't require the army to come in, even though we get that helicopter sequence towards the end. Do you know what I mean? That's a rare thing that the Soviets. They probably would choose somewhere like that if that was a real thing, because they wouldn't want the. If you're near a city, then someone presses the alarm button and you've got the whole army on your back door. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's great. It plays into those old tropes, but it makes a lot of sense. I think that, you know, hats off to the most useless character again in the season, which is Mike's dad.
In it for a grand total of about maybe
4 minutes.
Yeah, if that's generous. That's very, very good.
Has he got a little sister as well? I think he has got a little sister.
I think we only saw the little sister when his mum is about to go out and sleep with Billy.
Yeah, and he's there snoring on the chair. Yeah.
I think that's the only time she was in it.
And he was also, I think he was in the fairground, wasn't he, I think?
You're right. They were on the...
On the gravitation
and they were on the Ferris wheel as well.
Oh, yes.
So, four minutes is a decent shout, I'll give you that.
Yeah, he's probably just had about 4 minutes of being asleep for about 2 minutes of season, which is impressive. But, you know, they did well with that. Those kind of characters that you, like we said, you kind of love those side characters because he's the most useless. He has no idea what's going on. But again, that character has been played out on film and TV so well over the years, and they just absolutely nail that again. Because there's always a clueless dad that's got no idea what's going on.
Well, normally you've either got the clueless dad or the typical sort of 80s Stepford wife, and you think that his mum's like that. But when she has that really, really nice talk with Nancy, and she's telling her to, you know, don't take shit from the men, to fight back and show them what you can do, and...
I think she was good, actually, albeit brief.
Ramp up Mike's mum a lot this season. She had a lot more. She probably had more this than she did in one and two combined.
Yeah, she was in one quite a lot because there was a lot going on at the buyer's or whatever house it is, Mike's house.
Wheeler, because,
you know, obviously with 11 being there and all that kind of stuff. But, I thought all the characters had equal amount of time, you know. I mean, it was great. They really gave everyone the opportunity. And like we said, maybe less so those characters we've got to know because we know them already. So I think they realised that maybe we'll just throw a little bit more at some of the new characters and give them a little bit more screen time. But when we
they've got a recipe that they know works. They know that people love, you know, the main whatever 7, 8, 9, 10 characters, so they know that if they sort of scale them back, they don't have to worry about it. It's quite safe. So they knew that, again, she was reasonably safe.
Mad Max is a great character. Yeah, I think
the reaction to her last season was really good. The way she came in and disrupted the group, and You know, she's a bit of a tomboy, but this season she showed a bit more of a girly side, the way she wanted to help Elle, like, find herself and not define herself as just being
She was great. The stuff she fed into Elle, and then when they were kind of spying on the boys and the boys were in their basement, you know, farting and burping and all that kind of stuff. It's just classic kind of, you know, it's clever. And then they argue about that later in it. It's like, you were spying on me? Do you know what I mean? It was really
clever. What if I've been taking a massive shit?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think we should leave it on that bombshell. That would be a nice note to leave it. But we've covered it as we would always like to do, relatively extensively. We've had no questions, but a lot of people have been buzzing about listening to this podcast after watching season three, which is great.
And it's nice to be able to get this done nice and quickly, like so soon after the release. So hopefully it's a lot more fresh in our mind.
If it's out, then it will be out within the week of release, hopefully, which is pretty cool. So, do listen, do share us around. I know some people do keep discovering us now and again, and we do get some good interaction. And it's great because I think what people like to do is they go, we don't have people saying, watch this because you guys would love this, but we have people going, it's Stranger Things. We know you'll be loving this. You know, we want to listen to that podcast a little bit and stuff. Yeah. So it's been cool. I know everyone's buzzing off this show. It's great, and the reaction is so positive. And I think everyone just hoped it would be this good this time around.
Yeah,
season two was a little bit disappointing, but not majorly. But everyone's just been waiting for this because I think it's such good escapism.
And season two was always going to be hard after season one.
Oh, huge! Yeah,
season one. They always say, don't they, about bands? You know, the difficult second album.
Well, of course it is.
The second season, whatever they did. It was not impossible, but it was going to be damn near impossible to better season one. But as we've said, if you want to be pragmatic about it, they put in the groundwork for season three in season two. Like we said about Game of Thrones, you know, that episode that set up the Battle of Winterfell had to happen to make it more meaningful. Season three of
You have to do that.
Is better for having season two to bring the characters in and set
and I would
the
say
story.
Season four is in great grounding. Like if they want to, you know, there's a great grounding of characters now. I think they've discovered more characters that really work rather than just relying on the main, you know, four kids and 11. Do you know what I mean? The four boys and 11. They've really done well to kind of get you to know these other characters and care about them and. Yeah, I just say hats off. It's Netflix's finest work, I'd say. You know, that it's their best independent show that they've ever done. And
I mean,
the
figures that they were getting just
it's great.
It defies logic to have had 18 million people finish it.
You've got 40, 50 million people or whatever already tuned in to watch a few episodes or you know, 30 million finished it or whatever. It's insane.
At the time, I mean, it's obviously changed now. I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, 18 million people had already watched the whole series.
And I mean, look, it's eight parts. Crazy. It's not huge, but it's not like just going to a film for 90 minutes. It's not like going to see Toy Story 4 or whatever, or Far From Home, you know, which is 2 hours 10 or whatever. You're going to see something that's just... eight parts, yes, you can watch it on your sofa, but to finish something that's eight parts that quickly, that's what Netflix have done. And we've talked about this before. They've built this. They are the ultimates in creating of this binge culture because they know, you know, it hooks people in. And these shows, I think they're made to be watched like that. I would struggle to watch this over a few nights.
Oh,
I watch it over a couple of days.
I would struggle to watch this weekly.
Yeah,
I'd hate to watch this weekly. A Tuesday night and then
people say that episode's a bit slow or it's a bit this, but it doesn't matter when you've got the next one straight on your doorstep. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter when you can tune in to next episode because, you know, episode four ramped up everything in this and everyone went, it kicks in when you get to episode four, but you've only had to watch a couple of hours of telly before
you get
to that.
You've only watched 3 hours before you get to it.
You know, you've watched three great hours of TV, but it's if you want those elements, the monsters and all that, you know it's coming. You know it doesn't not deliver this show. You know, even if it's not quite with you for a couple of episodes, you know, just give it another 50 minutes and you're going to get some incredible moment of what you've been waiting for, because I think it plays to its strengths, as we said, and that's what's so good about this show. It doesn't try to be something that it's not, and it doesn't try to break the mold or the formula. It knows what it's good at,
yeah,
and what it's good at they've just expanded upon and made it even better. So, yeah, like I said, fantastic, fantastic TV show, and hats off to everyone involved. I know some, you know, it's been a great project. This, everyone loves it. So, all good. We've both seen Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Did you see it twice in the end?
No, it didn't. Our plans changed for the Saturday.
Okay. So, intriguing. We will follow up with Spider-Man.
It didn't change in a bad way, though. We went to a retro arcade bar in Leeds. We paid 16 quid to get in, and we were there for about 5 hours playing brilliant, like proper old
plastic
games.
There's a bar in Manchester that's got some good retro consoles that you might have to check out.
Oh, I was thinking about maybe going there for my birthday, but the one in Leeds, they've got another one in Bury, and it's three floors. So the bottom floor you've got new games.
Oh, it's like
your
proper.
The second
floor, you know, the Museum of Science and Industry. You know, the big museum in town. That's got every year. It tends to have like a games retro thing. I went with Jacob once, and it had like everything.
This is a full like custom made thing. The second floor is old retro stuff, and then the top floor they had some PC, some Mario Kart, and then they had some virtual reality stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
I played virtual reality. It was set in the world of Portal. You weren't actually, well, the game was you could actually play Portal in VR, but they only let you do the demo. So you're interacting with some of the robots, and it's absolutely mind blowing stuff. It really is. Yeah. And I could have spent 5 hours in that if they would have let me.
Yeah, that's cool.
Sadly, there was a queue though.
But we did both watch Spider-Man. We've both got slightly mixed feelings in terms of I do because you loved it, and I'm a little bit more on the fence. But I did still have lots of great things to talk about. I'm not going to be controversial. It's just it's hard to follow Endgame, obviously, as Ant-Man was the same last year.
Yeah.
But we will talk in detail, and we will talk those incredible post-credit.
Well, that'll be our next one, won't it?
Yeah.
Should be doing that next week.
Yeah, plan to do that next week. And then, I don't know, free ourselves up for something different. But there's some good stuff over the summer coming out. I think film-wise, it's a little bit more subdued, but TV, I don't know, San Diego Comic-Con's going to deliver some interesting things in the coming
weeks. Yeah, because Marvel are back there this year.
Marvel have got a big 90 minutes set, so we'll see what they talk about. So, all good. Right, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing us and listening and reviewing and everything you do. But do keep it coming because we just want to keep reaching more people. And our follower count creeps up slowly, but you know, keep interacting, keep talking to us. It's great.